I recommend sending a quick email recap within 30 to 60 minutes of the meeting, summarizing what happened and what next steps are. This is like the new virtual handshake.
Digital meetings are often shorter, and in a shorter meeting, you want to make sure that you're getting all of the points across, and you probably want to have more visuals because you want to keep the engagement up.
The beauty of the environment we're in is we can spread our message through social media, through our website, and I think recorded video content is the driver.
Welcome to the Bright House Financial Insights Panel Podcast. In these monthly conversations, leading experts share actionable tips and strategies to help financial professionals like you build strong businesses and lasting relationships with clients. Hello, I'm your host, Stephen Boswell, president of the Oxley Institute, a leading provider of marketing solutions for financial professionals. Today, we're going to discuss another topic in our series on retaining clients, specifically on how to identify, attract, and service clients who are interested in a digital relationship. The percentage of investors willing to work remotely with a financial professional increased from about 50% in early 2020 into the low 60% range in the summer of 2020. This is an opportunity for financial professionals to cater to their clients' preferences and continue to offer the option for clients to have either a completely virtual or hybrid in-person virtual relationship. And this comes with benefits for both financial professionals and their clients. But in order to continue offering a virtual service matrix, financial professionals will want to better understand communication strategies for virtual clients and how to make virtual presentations more engaging. Joining me today are communications expert Erica Dewan, author of Digital Body Language, How to Build Trust and Connection No Matter the Distance, and prospecting and marketing expert Mary Beth Kuzmeski, the founder of Red Zone Marketing. Welcome, Mary Beth, and welcome, Erica. Mary Beth, why is it even appealing to have clients who embrace virtual meetings?
Well, the best thing from a marketing perspective is the whole world can now be a potential client for you, or everyone in the United States for sure. If you look at what's happening, you no longer have to market in your back door. You can provide the same service and be able to have the same impact that you might on a client if they were sitting right in front of you. We have a financial professional that is in California, and he's in the middle of an area that's really difficult in terms of traffic. He is seeing his clients face to face via Zoom now when he hadn't seen them for such a long time because they never wanted to come into the office. They may be willing to have more meetings if they don't have to travel an hour and a half through Los Angeles traffic to be able to get in and see their financial professional.
I love that, Mary Beth. And I actually think in addition to geographical inclusivity of clients, it can help professionals attract a younger, more tech-savvy client base, which also increases the opportunity to help them build greater wealth as they progress in age.
Yeah, as you think about from the client perspective, they were relying upon who lived in their local area. So when their universe is broadened here and I can choose from anybody around the country, it's really a good thing for them to be matched up with somebody who's going to best fit their needs.
Erica, how would you identify a good candidate for a virtual relationship?
When it comes to identifying a good candidate for a virtual relationship, it goes back to asking yourself, is this client a digital native or are they a digital adapter? Now, digital natives are those that have often bought products or services their entire lives online. Things that you can do to identify and segment your digital natives to digital adapters are things like, are your clients attending virtual seminars or webinars that you might host? Do they have a social media presence or not? Do they read your email newsletters or not? And simply being able to segment by even these simple factors using your CRM system can allow you to ensure you know who are best for virtual only and who aren't. I think it starts by looking at their previous interactions as a starting point to determine how to best engage with them. So, do they follow your social media? Do they respond best in email? Or do they like in-person meetings? When in doubt, I think it's best to just communicate directly with a client and set expectations and simply ask, but also follow their lead. Another thing is to really segment introverts to extroverts. Is this a client who really likes a virtual-only relationship but is an introvert? Thereby, maybe it's important to send some questions 48 hours or a week in advance of the meeting so that they have time to process ideas versus an extrovert who loves those quick phone calls, catch-ups out of the blue.
I absolutely agree, Erica. Mary Beth, do you have anything to add?
sometimes we find that if you ask a client how many times they want to meet, they're not going to necessarily give an answer because they're not sure. So if you lay out, here are the meetings that we would like to have with you throughout the year. Would you like to do these meetings digitally? Or would you like to do these meetings in person? Would you like us to come to you? Would you like to come to us? And giving them some real specifics around those meetings, because we need to be in front of our clients to be able to offer them the right services and strategies and solutions that they really need in their best interest.
I agree. I think it all goes back to understanding your client's communication preferences and their learning styles. Remember, some clients are more visual learners and communicators. Some really just want to get to the point in written text. It's also important to determine which services and products financial professionals can easily promote and support in a virtual setting, whereas others that may be best in a face-to-face setting, especially along their wealth management journey.
That's a great point, Erica. As you think about some of the more holistic conversations you might have with somebody, it seems a little bit off to do those virtually. I'd rather be sitting down with my family, with my financial professional, to talk about my legacy, my estate plan, and other really weighty topics.
Absolutely. If someone has just gone through a serious life event, be thoughtful in how you engage with them. Maybe opt for a phone call instead of an email. Maybe choose to set up an informal dinner versus a rushed Zoom meeting.
And we've seen it over the last year. It's one thing to do virtual meetings. It's another to do it well. There are still differences in quality of how we portray ourselves virtually versus how we've learned to portray ourselves in real life. I'm curious for your thoughts on that. How do you go about getting better at virtual meetings? What makes for better virtual meetings?
I think it's also important to think about what each financial professional can do before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. Remember, it's a journey. So before the meeting, ask yourself, how does this client like to process information? Should I send a thoughtful deck in advance with an agenda? Should I send a quick 2-minute video? Or should I just clarify, here's what success looks like at the end of the meeting in a meeting calendar invite? Even simple things like a good subject title for a meeting can get a client excited for that discussion.
One of the things we've done with financial professionals is to practice, to go through and say, this is what I want to deliver in this particular review meeting with this client, and do a mock meeting so you can see, what do you look like on the screen? How are you presenting these things? And the other things that we've noticed have been really important are that those digital meetings are often shorter. And in a shorter meeting, you want to make sure that you're getting all of the points across, and you probably want to have more visuals because you want to keep the engagement up. You want to keep them on the screen, on you, listening and focused. So we have to really think about how we're engaging all the time. More visuals, shorter meetings, more concise, and practice, practice, practice.
So in terms of a standard review meeting between a financial professional and their client, you wouldn't necessarily want to have a screen share of their asset allocation and performance for the entire meeting. We'd probably rather mix it up with perhaps full screen video of each other to begin with, then maybe some screen sharing, maybe a video that your firm has put out. But let's add a little spice, a little variety, and keep things interesting.
When you are engaging with them, be thoughtful of when to turn on the screen share, as Mary Beth said, and when not to. And remember that it may be different depending on the client. And last but not least, after the meeting, I recommend sending a quick email recap within 30 to 60 minutes of the meeting, summarizing what happened and what next steps are. This is like the new virtual handshake. It will allow your clients to feel heard and valued and make sure you have clear next steps moving forward.
Yeah, and actually on that note, we have financial professionals now doing that same follow-up, Erica. They're doing it via video. So they sit down at their computer and they do a recap right after the meeting via video. Here's what we talked about. And if you have a good agenda and you've kept good notes, it's easy to do that. Financial professionals will use things like BombBomb to be able to send out a quick video that goes through email, so it's compliance friendly, and it just recaps it, and it makes the whole process even more friendly than just that phone meeting or even just that video meeting that's over. Now you've got that follow-up that reminds them how much they really appreciated that meeting and how much they learned.
Those are some great tips. I mean, just like we might send out an email to thank a client for the time we spent with them in the office, we should be doing that same thing to recap our virtual meetings and stay top of mind. But we need our actual virtual meetings to shine to help engagement too.
Let's think about the quality of our cameras, our microphones, our lighting, all the things that make for better video. You want to put your best foot forward. But we also want to have that same quality when it comes to our video backdrops, what we wear when we're on camera, and even how we set the cameras up. Right, Erica?
I think that's so true. A few tips on that is, number one, make sure you have a camera where you're far away enough from the screen where your clients can see not only your face, but your hand gestures, but you're not too far where they can't see your face. Secondly, make sure that you don't have a distracting video background. And last but not least, I truly recommend looking into the camera, at least for the first few minutes of the meeting. Don't just look at the Zoom screen. We want to be making eye contact, which means looking into the camera at least 40 to 60% of the time in a digital meeting.
I think the key is to avoid the distractions that you're having, that the clients would have by looking at you going, what is she doing over there? Wait, is that, what book is that in the background? Let's make it just about this interaction between you and the client. And you can get any kind of a background, and it's really, really helpful so your shoulder doesn't disappear and all the things that happen that are super distracting. And one of the products that we recommend is AnyVoo, A-N-Y-V-O-O, and you can order a plain background.
So when we end up with better virtual meetings, I think people tend to want to have them more often. So if we're putting our best foot forward in terms of video quality, if the technology is seamless both on our end and on the client's, to your point, Mary Beth, if the meeting is engaging and there's some variety here, we're going to have more people want to take us up on doing virtual meetings, saving us time, helping us in so many ways. The beauty of the environment we're in is we can spread our message through social media, through our website, and I think recorded video content is the driver. So we've all gotten better video conferencing. Can we put some of that on film? Can we use that to disseminate our message across the country? What have you seen, Mary Beth, in terms of that taking shape? What are some best practices for building a national presence in today's environment?
We actually work with a firm of financial professionals in Atlanta who have 9 different niches that they focus on. Well, how do you have 9 different niches? Well, you've got 9 specialists that are actually serving those niches, and they have landing pages for every single one of those particular niches. And on that landing page is a video describing what they do, has a call to action that is maybe the 5 things that physicians need to know when investing, something that someone may want to actually give up their email for, and start to engage people. And all of that is to drive people from social media or other places or even referrals to that landing page.
Remember, typically it's very common now for clients to Google a financial professional before they engage with them. So you want to make sure that your Google search or even your LinkedIn profiles are inclusive of your niches, as well as simple things like have a good profile picture and be thoughtful about the different references you use on your website so that you can make sure you're adequately engaging all of those niches.
But the key is engaging. And in order to engage, we've got to have interesting content, but it's not necessarily a cool idea or a cool topic unless someone actually clicks on it or engages with it.
And there are no shortage of avenues. You know, if you have written content, you have podcast, you have recorded video, you have longer form recorded webinar, these are great for not only existing clients, but for spreading your message through social media channels to arrive at new people. We should be thinking about more of documenting our real life experiences. So as you're thinking about if you're a financial professional who's helped physicians, for example, what's a recent example of how you've helped a physician? How could I turn that both into a video content, podcast content, written content? I can multi-purpose that in so many different ways. I'm thinking, what could I share that has actually worked for someone that I could share with a broader audience? Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks once again to Erica and Mary Beth for participating. Insightful, as always. Stay tuned, everyone, for our next podcast focused on communicating in a way that meets client expectations and being more holistic. We're going beyond the numbers to develop emotional connections with your clients.
You can find more episodes of the Bright House Financial Insights Panel podcast on brighthousefinancialpro.com/insightspanel. Or subscribe for free through any podcast app to receive new episodes direct to your mobile device. Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights Panel from Bright House Financial. This information is brought to you courtesy of Bright House Financial Incorporated, which provides, through its affiliates, annuities and life insurance products issued by Bright House Life Insurance Company, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28277, and in New York only by Bright House Life Insurance Company of New York, New York, New York, 10017. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers are compensated for their participation as subject matter experts. For financial professional use only, not for public distribution. Brighthouse Financial Incorporated is not affiliated with nor endorses any businesses or organizations that appear in this material. Research for the statistic on investors' preferences for virtual relationships is from a ThinkAdvisor story from November 11th, 2020.